Here in the Northern Rockies, dark winter months are outlasted in basements, dens, and nooks where kindred souls gather together to share intel, swap fly patterns, and relive the memories from seasons past. This gathering spot, known locally as the February Room, is the inspiration for this podcast. No matter the season, the door is always open to those with a fly fishing story to tell. Brought to you by CD Fishing USA, the North American distributor for composite development fly rods and accessories. 40 years of Kiwi ingenuity and graphite technology now available at cd-fishing.us or your local CD USA dealer. Follow us on Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. And remember to go fishing. Here's your host, the Carnops, and this is the February Room.
A weathered fishing guide once told me that it's easier to get into guiding than it is to get out of it. I believe he was spot on, and when our 40s come and go, guides need to have some sort of an exit strategy in place. My guest today was able to roll his vast experience on the oars into a career with one of the elite manufacturers of inflatable boats. Chris McAdams, welcome to the February Room.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. I'm humbled to be here, quite frankly.
Well, thanks, man. This is fun. This is my first in-person podcast interview. So, yeah, I don't know if you got the memo or not, but COVID's gone. It's over.
COVID is over, they say. yeah, and it's nice to, for me personally, not to be worrying about it and just going on with my daily life. That being said, I know we have a couple friends that are sick right now. So, I don't know. I haven't been concerned with it. I've been working and guiding and taking on this new role with NRS. And so it's nice to have it out of my mind and focusing on work and doing other stuff. So yeah, everyone has a different take and everyone has a different experience.
Yeah, no doubt. It's super good to see you again. And before we delve into who you are and what you're up to, I know you've traveled extensively. You've been a guide for a really long time, and you've got to have a fishing story to show for all of this.
So. I have a few stories. My wife told me to not drink too much coffee before this interview and write a few things down.
Okay, so good man.
I did that. And yeah, I've got tons of stories. I've been accused of maybe exaggerating stories at times, but that's part of a good story sometimes.
For sure. Never ruin a good story with the facts.
Right? That's right. Never let the truth, they say, that's right, get in the way of a good story.
That's true. Yeah.
So, let's see. Here's a story. So a couple years ago, pre-COVID, I was just doing my normal routine, guiding 7 days a week. And I went into the one of the fly shops I work with, the Grizzly Hackle, and they were, just normal day. They said, hey, who you're guiding tomorrow? And I said, no, it doesn't really matter. Just another work day. And they said, yeah, it's Joe Montana. And the first thing I thought was, why in the heck would you want me? I guess maybe everybody else was busy or, the outfitter was already booked, obviously. So perhaps that's why they gave him to me. I don't know. But it will definitely go down as, two of the best days or the most memorable days I've ever had on the water. And so the story is kind of a long one, so I'll try to shorten it up.
No, man. I want to hear all about this, man. This is awesome.
I've been accused of a few things such as a long-winded stories. So I'll try to shorten it up. So yeah, they said, you're guiding Joe Montana tomorrow. I said, okay, wow. I don't really get like starstruck. As far as like,
yeah, but Montana would do it.
Oh boy. And so it could have been any actor or actress. It just, I don't really Hollywood types, I just don't really care too much about that stuff. But Joe Montana, that's a different story.
No doubt.
I think everyone, especially our age, grew up admiring and watching him play.
You're hating him.
Or hating him.
Just kill you every time.
Oh, yeah. Every time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I grew up a Seahawk.
But you respected him. That's for sure.
Everyone respected him. And so he, I think, is one of those role models. And I think there's folks that have a photo of him in their cubicle somewhere that aren't even football fans.
For sure.
That just see him as a leader, a role model. He's kind of an average size guy, he's, it's like
right
6'2" or something.
Yeah,
you know, just a normal size guy.
Wouldn't even get drafted today, probably.
Probably not.
Right.
And so, yeah. So anyway, to shorten up the long-winded story, I, you know, cleaned up my act even more so than normal. And so
got well, at least they gave you a little heads up.
They gave me a day, you know, 24 hours or something. So I cleaned up the boat and got it to the clean enough. I've been also accused of being really anal with the boat and the truck and, you know, that sort of thing.
Sure.
So I cleaned it up even beyond that point and made sure I had a good lunch and all that stuff. So anyway, I show up at the DoubleTree. Joe's comes out. He's got nothing, no fishing gear or anything, just a bottle of red wine in his hand. And he was with his son, Nate, I believe is his name. And, you know, he stood out like a sore thumb standing out there. And there's, you know,
people knew who he was.
Well, there's guys, you know, with a suit on and a briefcase standing out there in front of the DoubleTree, the Finn and Porter, with a briefcase with their jaw just hanging open, you know, staring at him, you know, very recognizable. Figure. So yeah, anyway, I introduced myself and, you know, I was a little nervous, obviously, just like I am now, with this podcast, but, yeah, I introduced myself and he got in the truck and, you know, just to break the ice, I noticed he had a bottle of red wine and it was, Drew Bledsoe's winery, double back.
Right.
Double
cool.
Back, yeah.
Okay.
Walla Walla, Washington.
Yeah.
And, I know Drew from Whitefish and mutual friends in common. So anyway, to break the ice, I was like, oh, hey, double back. And
dude, that's perfect.
Yeah. And so he's like, oh, you know, Drew. And I said, well, I know who he is. Yeah. I've, you know, from Whitefish, we have mutual friends in common. And he was kind of chuckled and I said, oh yeah, that's pretty good wine. You know, it's like $100 dollar bottle of red wine or whatever. And he made a joke. He said, yeah, it'll do for boat wine, you know? And so he kind of broke the ice and we were on our way to go fishing. And so anyway, we're going to the Blackfoot. And so there's no glass on the Blackfoot, obviously.
Right.
It's illegal. And
oh, boy.
Even if you're Joe Montana, it's illegal.
So, right.
We had to...
Nalgene the wine?
Yeah, we had to Nalgene the wine, which isn't ideal. And for someone like that, I probably would have rolled. You know, it's
right.
Not safe to say, right, but I probably would have rolled the dice.
You could say that now. You're not guiding anymore, man.
Yeah, I can
man.
Say that now. Well, we'll see. I've got all my stuff in case this, you know, what do they say? Don't quit your day job.
The eternal backup plan,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, got a couple irons in the fire in case this doesn't go well. So
right.
Anyway, so moving forward, we did what we had to do. And Joe was just coming off of, I don't know if it was a fourth shoulder surgery on that right arm, that throwing arm. And I went, you know, geeked out after the trip and everything and went back and watched some old footage. And yeah, you see why. Those guys got pounded back then. It was
totally
pre...
Lawrence Taylor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Different world. That
right.
was before the, what do they call it? The Brady rule.
Right.
You know, that was when they...
Brady rule.
You know what I mean? Whatever. I have a lot of friends that are Patriots fans. So anyway, he was, you go back and look at that old footage and those guys, they let them pummel the quarterback.
Totally.
Joe being kind of a normal sized guy. It's not like a Ben Roethlisberger type.
Right.
You know, he's just an average sized guy. So anyway, he's got his arm in a sling. He'd just come off of another shoulder surgery. And the doctor told him, you know, the last thing you want to do is this motion, which is fly fishing, casting.
Sure.
So he's got his arm in a sling, whatever. We get out there and he's trying to do it left-handed and he's, you know, obviously very coordinated. So he's able to do it somewhat left-handed. And so in my mind, selfishly, just wanted to make sure the day went smooth and he caught a couple nice fish and luckily he did. And selfishly, you know, of course I wanted to get a photo with him. And then, you know, he's getting into the red wine and I'm sure he's in pain.
Right.
From the surgery.
Sure.
And, like I said, his doctor, you know, told him the last thing he wanted him to do was go fly fishing in Montana. And so anyway, we're out there and he ended up hooking a nice fish and was able to fight it with, you know, his left hand and his left arm. And we managed to net it and I got a photo and everything. And I'm sure someday I'll blow that up and have it at my house in my fly tying room or something. But
that's so cool.
Yeah, it was cool, man.
Was that your last guide season?
That was pre-COVID. So what would that be, like 3 seasons ago?
Was it that long ago?
I remember
seeing a picture of that when that happened. I was like, no way.
I know.
How cool.
Oh, it was so cool. And again, I don't really, I don't know if there's any celebrities or anything that I would be that excited about.
Right.
Just, I don't know.
No, I mean, Joe, but Joe's, he'd be in the top five, I think, of,
I think
of
so.
People that I would,
yeah.
If I had a, had my druthers, man, I took a pro athlete one time, but he was a baseball pitcher, probably a guy I hadn't heard of him. And I was a baseball fan, but he had pitched for like 8 years for the Cardinals. And I mean, he was a legit reliever, you know, he was, I looked him up afterwards, of course. And like, he was a legit pitcher.
Top tier athlete.
Right. For sure. Coming off of Tommy John surgery. And I remember the last day, the trip was a little tough, man. I gotta be honest, like his brother came along and he was real kind of a needy, kind of a problem guy to deal with. And we were steelhead fishing and they'd never been steelhead fishing. And, you know, they didn't have like a big background of, you know, fishing experience behind them. And like, I thought we were doing really well. We were catching some fish, but they wanted more. And you know how the deal goes. And then the last morning, you know, he was throwing rocks across the river, like thinking, oh man, my arm's feeling so much better. And and the guy that was running gear on our trip and the chef, you know, it was just kind of like at the end of his rope with this crew a little bit. And he walked down, his name was Jared, and he walked down and grabbed a rock about the size of a softball and just hucked it all the way across the Deschutes and then turned and walked back up to camp and and kind of shut the guy up. But it was challenging, but that would be that's amazing that you got to do that.
Oh,
that
it is, was incredible. And you know, I'm very grateful. And you know, with this, you've been doing this a long time as well. And, you know, you meet folks and you've, you know, relationships and stuff. You sometimes you build relationships. Sometimes you meet people that become lifelong friends. But this was next level, this whole thing. And I got to take him for 2 days.
Cool.
One day on the Blackfoot and one day on the Bitterroot. And so, you know, that Blackfoot trip went well. Everything, you know, nothing, you know, happened out of the norm, and he got a nice big trout. So that made me feel good. And again, selfishly, I got a photo with him with the fish. And so
of course
that's that. And then, so the next day we're headed to the Bitterroot. He stuffed in the back of my truck, with his knees kind of up, stuffed in the back seat. And his son is in the front seat. Nate, I think is his son's name. And he, you know, he's on the phone, Joe is, and he's politely, taps me on the shoulder and he says, hey, because there was two boats this day. There was another guide with, I think it was Joe's son-in-law maybe. So there was three anglers.
Okay.
So there was an open seat in theory in the other boat. And so we're headed down to the Bitterroot and Joe taps me on the shoulder and politely asks, hey, you know, would you mind if we stop by my buddy's house on the way down? He lives down the Bitterroot. If you stop by and, you know, see if he would want to jump in the other boat. Since there was an empty
open seat,
right? An open seat. And so, yeah, sure. Of course, you know, whatever you want to do. So, and that his friend, he was talking to Huey Lewis and that their buddies maybe from the Bay Area or what have you. And so we went to Huey's house on Mitchell Slough, blah, blah, blah. We hung out there. That was cool. Huey went on a long rant about Mitchell Slough and I bit my tongue.
Yep.
And right. I just went along with it.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
went with the flow and that was great. And Huey was really nice and inviting and, took us into his, he had a new, what would you call it? It was like a, he's a big duck hunter. So he had like this like duck room with a, like a commercial, like plucker you run the ducks through.
Wow.
And it rips all the feathers off of them real quick. Like you
was he through. Running that? Was it?
He wasn't running it, but he wanted to show it to us and it was cool. And he had some cool duck mounts and stuff and gave me a couple frozen ducks. And anyway, so we moved on from there. And again, my story is
got a couple frozen ducks.
Got a couple frozen ducks out of it.
Nice. Deal. Were they grebes or?
I don't what know. Did he toss I'll tell you one thing. They did not
couple
taste.
Couple mergansers.
They did not taste good. I spent all the time. We got this wood-fired pizza oven in the backyard. I marinated these things like orange, you know, fresh orange juice and all this crap. And I marinated them and I tried to roast them in the damn pizza oven. And they, the flavor was really good, but the ducks were tough like leather. So anyway, I'm sure I screwed up the process. Anyway, so moving forward, got a couple ducks out of the deal. So we end up getting on the river, whatever. Huey actually didn't go in the other boat. His good friend, Andy Carlson, longtime guide down the Bitterroot. I don't know if he's retired or what.
He's still working,
is
I
he
think,
still
man.
Working? Okay.
Jeez, I was down there the other day and somebody had seen him.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, so his good buddy, Andy, he wanted to go with him. So inevitably, I guess you'd say three boats.
So Andy came and joined
Andy
you
came
at halftime?
His,
or?
No, he. I can't recall what happened. He came and picked Huey up and they went and in his boat. So there's three boats and we're doing the same stretch. And so Huey went with Andy and then, you know, the other guide boat, whatever. We are all out there on the same stretch.
Okay.
I recall we like somewhere around Woodside, if I remember right. Anyway, so Huey's idea was to meet up for all of us to meet up at the Victor Steakhouse. And in my mind, I'm thinking, yes, this is going to be awesome. You know, afterwards, we're supposed to meet up at like, we're supposed to meet at, if we got separated, which we did on the river, we'd meet up at the takeout at whatever, 4:30 or something, 5 o'clock. And then it was Huey's idea to go to the steakhouse, the Victor Steakhouse, which I've been hearing about for a long time.
Ever, yeah.
Ever. And they've never been for some reason.
Yeah, I went one time a while ago just because it's the same deal. Like, how have I never been in here? I'm going to swing in here and eat. But anyway.
Yeah. And so anyway. I've been hearing about this place and. You know, we would, back in the day, we'd take folks from Stock Farm or something and they would mention it. Oh, it's good steaks and all this. So anyway, so this is Huey's idea. So I'm thinking, yes, this is going to be great. We're going to go drink some wine and have steaks with Joe Montana.
Right.
And his son and his son-in-law.
This is all time.
Huey, this is going to be all time.
Yeah.
I can't wait for this. And so we go out on the river, whatever. Fishing was decent, I recall. And of course, we get separated. And I think Huey and Andy were off wade fishing a side channel or something. And so to try to shorten up the long story, we get to the takeout at the time we all agreed on to meet 4:35 or whatever. And they weren't there. They, you know, they were late, you know, whatever. They were wade fishing, probably a side channel and got some dry fly fishing or something. And so they were dragging their feet. And so we're waiting there. I got my boat cinched up and we're just kind of hanging around, milling around. And Joe's like, well, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, in my mind, I'm like, well, Jesus, I want to wait. I'll wait here until they get here. Or let's, you know, I want to go to the Victor Steakhouse and have a steak and hang out and drink some red wine and just, you know, have that experience.
Sure.
And so we waited and waited and 20 minutes goes by and Joe's like, well, so what do you think? You want to get going? And I'm thinking to myself, I want to wait for those guys to get here. And I'm thinking to myself, come on, Huey, like this was your plan.
Right.
Let's do this. Like, where are you at?
Right.
And so I think they just were fishing, wade fishing and lost track of time, whatever. And so of course I'm, you know, very, I'm just like, whatever you want to do, you know, Mr. Montana or Joe or whatever, you know, it's up to you. But really, of course I wanted to go meet for dinner. And so he's like, we waited maybe 20 minutes, half hour. And so he's like, well, let's just get going, go back to Missoula. And I'm,
damn it.
God dang it, Huey. And so they never showed up. We drove back, to Missoula.
Never went to the steakhouse.
Never went to the steakhouse.
Oh, bummer.
And so it was a bummer, actually, selfishly. And so we get back to the Doubletree and, you know, Joe Montana is just staying at the Doubletree like an average person, just like an average Joe, if you will.
Yeah.
And so we go in there and my friend Janine's bartending there and she has been forever. She's the manager. And so we sit down at the bar. It's happy hour or something. I don't know. Oysters and a beverage. And so Joe ordered a martini of some sort. And I had a beer. And Joe's son, Nate, had a beer. And I ordered some like oysters and chicken wings, whatever. And we're finishing that up and some conversation. And they're probably going to go on to dinner somewhere. Who knows? And I was going to head home with my story. And you know, he says, I'll get this, you know, he says to the bartender, my friend Janine. And I said, I've already got it, you know, I've already got it. And he kind of looks out of the corner of his eye at me like, the peasant fishing guide isn't buying Joe Montana's martini and his damn oysters, you know. It's like, know your place, son, you know. And so Janine winked at me and said, you know, Chris has already got it. And he kind of shook his head like, what, you know, this doesn't happen. It doesn't, right. doesn't go like this.
Right.
So anyway, that was kind of nice. And so I got to buy him.
Oh, that's
the
cool.
Yeah. The peasant fishing guide bought him some oysters.
So you did. You did buy Joe Montana.
I did.
Yeah.
I did. And he went on his way and I went on my way. And that's that story.
Well, that's really cool, man. Yeah, what, it was so now was his son, was he an avid fly angler or was he...
You know,
was he into it or
he was into it? Yeah, he enjoyed it. And they're both obviously, you know, good athletes. So I don't think they fish a ton, but they were both, you know, decent anglers. And yeah, I think Nate fishes a little bit and Joe fishes a little bit. But I think the real angler in the family, I think, is Joe's father. And that's. I think where they got it from. I think he's an avid angler and, you know, I'm not sure how accurate this story is, but from what I gather, when Nate was going to school here, Nathan, something like that.
Right.
Yeah. Was going to school here yeah. as a quarterback, obviously, sure. and tough shoes, big shoes to fill.
Yep. Yeah. No, could you imagine?
I can't. And I think perhaps he played maybe if I recall, a year or two at Notre Dame.
Joe, did he? Yeah,
Joe,
yeah.
Joe's
yeah.
alma mater or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then right. it wound up here. And
right.
So the story was, I believe that Joe Sr., maybe Joe Montana's father, was living here. And maybe, you know, I don't know if he was living with Nate or whatever while he was going to school, but I guess he was going up fishing all the time, Joe Sr., up or Joe Montana's father, up at Rock Creek.
Okay.
And was just gone fishing all the time. So I think that was the real angler. He was the real angler in the family. So,
well, how cool.
Yeah.
What a turn of events that landed those guys in your boat.
Totally.
Man, that's awesome.
It was fun.
That's really cool. It's amazing when you take a, you know, the picture that I mentioned, like, you know, that guy was injured and he'd never steelhead fished before, mm-hmm. but just being an elite athlete, like by day two, I mean, he could freaking cast
right.
through the wind and effectively steelhead fish. And like, mm-hmm. you know, that's that not everybody can pick it up like
no,
that.
Not so
I'm sure Joe, even with an injured wing, just trying it left-handed was actually fairly effective.
Totally. And he tried it right-handed as well. And I'm sure it was painful, but yeah, no, it was a great story and a great experience. Yeah. And it's funny because people ask all the time, oh, you know, who's the most famous person? You know,
Joe Montana.
Well,
now I got somebody.
Yeah. Now finally. And there were some others.
Over I never the, had anybody that anybody would ever recognize.
Well, so, there was some others over the years, just circumstantial. One year we took, it was a multi-boat trip, but when we first moved to Missoula from the Flathead Valley, I don't know how long, it's been 18 years or something like that ago, we took Scalia and John Roberts, Chief Justice. John
oh,
Roberts.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was cool. A couple boats.
Oh, boy.
I actually had the Secret Service in my boat.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, I bet there was heavy security on
heavy
that
heavy security. And then my buddy Damon had Secret
Scalia. Oh,
Scalia. Wow. Yeah, cool. Scalia wow. and John Roberts.
Oh, that's cool.
It was cool.
Yeah, you've had some interesting days, cool. man.
But people ask, and I say for sure, Joe Montana. And now, it depends yeah, on who you ask.
Sure.
It depends on who you ask, though. You know, some folks that are would say, you know, maybe Scalia.
Scalia, yeah. right? Yeah.
So, anyways, yeah, there's been cool. a couple, not many.
That's awesome. So, you put like 20 years in on the oars and mm-hmm. Started doing some work for Northwest River Supply. Northwest River Supplies, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
That's
NRS.
Right.
Everybody knows it by the acronym NRS.
But, yes.
Started doing some work for them years ago and mm-hmm. like they're on their ambassador team and stuff. Mm-hmm. And now you've rolled that over into a full-time position with them. What are your daily duties now with NRS?
So daily duties, it's, you know, before one of my best friends is a sales manager for the company. And that's the only reason, probably almost certainly the only reason I have this.
No
this
way, man. You out. Guided Joe Montana.
It yeah,
can't well, be a coincidence that you went from Montana.
Yeah, well, that's, yeah. So basically I feel like if it wasn't for one of my best friends, I would never be in this, I would never be this fortunate and I would never have this amazing opportunity to work for this amazing company that's 100% employee owned. It's an ESOP.
That's so cool.
Just under 200 employees. Bill Parks founded the company in 1972 in his garage with $2,000 in Moscow, Idaho. So I'm fortunate and humbled. And sometimes I feel as though I don't even deserve it, but I'm moving forward. I'm trying my best. And so I'm the wholesale accounts manager for the Northeast of the United States, which I've haven't done much exploring over there, but I'm about to.
Okay,
cool. As well as Montana and Wyoming.
Oh, okay. So they gave you your home territory and the other side of the other side of the country. Okay. That's right.
So there's 21 states. I'm the wholesale accounts manager. So
it's, 21 states.
Yeah, wow. There are. And so a little overwhelmed with that. It seems like a bit of a kind of a monumental challenge, but just one task at a time, you know, one day at a time, just trying to learn and be open and just trying to do the best I can.
Cool. So like, is like West Virginia and
it basically goes when they said the Northeast, when my good friend told me this job became available and he said the Northeast, I was thinking like New England.
Maine?
Yeah, I was thinking New England states. I was thinking Vermont, Maine, New Hampshire. I was like, oh, this is going to be great.
Right.
I've always wanted to go there, especially like in the fall, obviously, with the photography thing.
Sure.
And so, yeah, no, it's Michigan and like New York up and over. So it's massive.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It's okay. It's huge.
A broad description of the Northeast. Yeah.
No, yeah, it's not really the Northeast. It's all of that. So it's exciting. And, you know, folks, you know, I'm really excited for obviously Montana and Wyoming. I just finished a really fun work loop, if you will, through Wyoming. You know, obviously went to Jackson and it was busy and tourists were already starting to kind of stack up there.
Mm-hmm.
So I got out of there and went down, you know, and hit these cool fishing kind of trout towns.
Like Pinedale.
Pinedale. And
that's cool
Cody.
Out there, isn't it? Yeah, yeah, man. Wyoming's awesome.
It was cool. Just did kind of a rural small town loop and met some really nice folks and just ranchers and some of these small towns that didn't feel, you know, it was just nice. It was a nice break. It wasn't buzzing with fishing guides with brand new
wasn't Craig.
And it wasn't Craig. It wasn't Bozeman. It wasn't even Missoula or the Flathead Valley. It was quiet and sleepy and it just felt great.
Awesome.
Kind of reminded us of what Montana was like when we moved here 25 or more years ago.
Right.
So yeah, anyway, it's been fun. It's going to be a learning experience and just try to remain humble and try to learn as much as possible.
Cool, man. And you mentioned photography too, and mm-hmm. you've been a photographer for quite a while and super talented. I've obviously seen a lot of your shots over the years. And you were telling me here that you've done, you know, all sorts of different types of photography from like wedding stuff to architecture and, mm-hmm. and real estate and obviously a lot of scenics and, mm-hmm. and fish and wildlife. And
yeah.
And, tell us about your photography career.
Yeah, sure. I don't know if I'd even call it a career. It's probably not to that point, but it's something I've always been passionate about. And I think technically my first job in Montana was a professional photographer and I had no idea what the hell I was doing. A friend of mine that I met, I moved to Whitefish for a working summer vacation. I was going to go work and fish and we went all over the Blackfoot on the east side reservation and fished all those lakes because of course we didn't have any money and we didn't have a drift boat or a raft or anything, so we were doing a lot of lake fishing and pontoon
duck
boats.
Lake and
duck
all that
lake
stuff.
Mission
yeah.
Kip
I've still never fished any of those.
Man so we spent a lot of time going over there because it was inexpensive and again we didn't have a boat, so we had like I think it was like a buck's bat or you know like a pond. It wasn't even a pontoon, but it was a float. Float tube.
Yeah, belly boat.
A belly boat. Yeah. So we put that on. I had this, you know, anyway, that's a whole nother story. I had a borrowed Chevy Celebrity that my buddy left at my cabin.
Sweet.
When he went to go commercial fishing in Alaska. So, you know, I'm dry. He said I could use it. So we'd put the float tubes on a bike rack and go fish all those pothole lakes over there.
Cool.
East of Glacier. So where was I going with the story? The first job was a photographer. So a friend of mine I met in Whitefish said, hey, my girlfriend's a photographer. She's leaving. She was moving or something. And so her job was, she was a photographer for Kathy Sullivan, who has mountain photography. And as I understand it, she's still doing it after all these years. And so I would sit there with my Labrador, Kootenai, at Bone Crusher Rapid on the Middle Fork of the Flathead River and take photos of the rafting companies when they go through.
Oh, how fun.
And so I took her role or her position as a photographer. Again, had no idea what the hell I was doing. And my buddy got me this job. And so back then, of course, it was film. So I would sit there and shoot photos with my dog. Kootenai was a big black lab. He was off the mean streets of Columbia Falls. he was orphaned, and we found out why, but someone had kicked him out, and we picked him up. And so anyway, he and I would drive up to the Middle Fork of the Flathead and sit there at Bone Crusher Rapid. He would take a stick up to the top of the rapid, drop it for himself, and swim the rapid, and then repeat that all day.
Really?
On his own. Yeah.
Wow, Kootenai how cool.
That. And then I would shoot the photos. And so that was my first gig in Montana was for mountain photography and shooting photos.
Shooting carnage in Whitewater.
Yeah. And then the tourists could get their photos, you know,
right.
Of them getting bucked out of the boat or sometimes the guide upside down, you know.
Or barfing out of the back because yeah, they're hungover.
Totally. All that stuff. Right. And so, yeah, that was my first gig in Montana. And that was a working summer vacation. Yeah. And then I went back home to Washington for a year and finished up some stuff and then was like, whoa, I've seen the light. It's not here.
So it's Washington
State.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where'd you grow up?
Tacoma, Washington.
Oh, okay. Cool.
And so I left there, you know, couldn't wait to get back to Montana and go hiking and biking and fishing. And here we are, you know,
right on.
Yeah. So the photography thing, I don't know if I'd call it a career, but, I've dabbled in it on and off for years. It's something I'm passionate about. And, you know, sometimes I'll leave it for years and come back. And so, yeah. I enjoy it, and hopefully with this new position, I'll get to kind of get back into it a little bit.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, there's tons of crossover. Everybody always needs a good photographer. Mm-hmm. Everybody does.
Yeah.
It's surprising, you know, just the volume now of images that are out there, but very few of them actually good.
I know.
You know?
Well, yeah.
You could go look at my entire personal library and be like, this is all junk. But when you see somebody who's actually really good that has an eye for it and knows what they're doing, it's such a cool skill and talent to have. I wish I was better at it.
But, well, it's like anything. You just have to, it's always interesting. You just have to do it, right? Repetition.
Put the time in.
Sheer repetition. And, you know, I still have a ton to learn. I barely scratched the surface after all these years. I have a lot to learn still. But nowadays, as we know, with technology and cell phones, those phones, those cameras have become, you know, so amazing that it's a shame that I don't bring my nice camera equipment. A lot of times now I'll just use the phone like everybody else does.
Right.
And that's good enough for most situations.
Right. So your new job, how much travel is going to be involved in this? Like going back to the Northeast?
Yeah.
Or a bunch of Northeast, travel. Which apparently starts in Nebraska.
Yeah, I guess. But, that's right. But, yeah. 21 states. Worth. So a lot of travel. And that's one thing that kind of scared me off initially. Kind of to backpedal a little bit. Like a fool, I passed on an opportunity. My friend, who is the sales manager for the company, gave me, I don't know, my memory, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago or something, maybe 2 years ago, offered, you know, a position, or at least one became available for me to apply for. And I kind of got scared off and was just whatever. He just told me there'd be a ton of travel, like, mm-hmm. like maybe 1/3 of the year traveling, mm-hmm. gone by yourself, traveling, hotel rooms. It's great. Maybe 20 years ago, that would have been great or whatever, you know, a younger version of me would want to travel 1/3 of the year.
Right.
But I was just, perhaps I used that as an excuse, all the travel to not pursue the opportunity. So that was, let's say, I don't know, 2 years ago or something. And I let that go and then had regret for doing so. Like, what are you, you know, my wife was like, are you crazy?
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do? Keep guiding?
Yeah.
You'd be an old hunched over man, sunburnt and crusted over.
You got out just at the right time.
Oh boy.
Like and late 40s.
Oh boy.
Around here, especially.
Man, I just turned 48 and I don't feel 48, but I am. And so the harsh reality is I passed on that. And for whatever reason I came up with, I think I used the travel as an excuse, quite frankly. And my good friend said, don't kid yourself. You'll be gone 100 and some days a year traveling, mm-hmm. and be by yourself in hotel rooms. And then you're that person that's a traveling salesperson sitting there at the the bar at the hotel with your computer, eating a steak, eating unhealthy and drinking, whatever. It's just an unhealthy lifestyle unless you're really have a lot of, you know, if you can get up and have a routine and exercise,
right?
You know, go for a run or go in the gym at the hotel and try to break that cycle. But next thing you know, you're just a fat traveling salesperson.
Not quite. You
could be selling pharmaceuticals.
Not quite like
that. You could be selling pharmaceuticals. You could be selling rafts, whatever. So I use that as an excuse. And my wife was like, you're a fool. Can't believe you passed on that. Are you crazy? 401k, profit sharing, ESOP, an amazing company.
Right.
You know, you're a fool. And I was like, yeah.
Plus, she's like, I could use a little.
Yeah.
I could use a little time alone at this point.
Well, and that's the funny part of it is quite frankly, my friend said to me, and we're all, you know, really good friends, and he knows my wife very well. And he said, just make sure you communicate to your wife how often you'll be gone, or, you know, 1/3 of the year up to. And I said, yeah. I said, yeah, I communicated that to her. And she said, bye-bye.
Didn't get a lot of pushback.
She said, goodbye. Get going. Get out there. Work hard. She's been, you know, she works for the state. She gets, she's done her part. And then
she supported a fishing guide for a long time.
She sure as hell did.
Right.
And health, the older we get, the more important health insurance becomes. Retirement, you know, we just met with a financial advisor to try to make a plan for retirement.
Right. Yeah.
And she's much more organized. And, you know, for me, I've always, I'm not proud of it, but I've always been like, I'll work hard, make money, spend it, enjoy life. You know, we don't have children, so it's a little different.
Right. I'm
not saving for college funds and stuff like that. So anyway, the point is she's done more than pull her weight, and she's saying, okay, now it's your turn, you know, mm-hmm. get out there and work. And if it means you traveling a bunch, so be it.
Well, you know, you got a great job, man. Congratulations to work for such a cool company in the industry that you've been in for a long time. It's kind of every like guy's dream to eventually land a job like this. So good on you, man.
Thanks.
That's great.
It's again, it's, you know, more, you know, like they say, the who you know and not what you know. And so I just feel very grateful and humbled to even have this opportunity. So I'm going to do my best.
Somebody told me the other day, it's not who you know, it's who knows you.
That's right.
So somebody must know you.
Well, it's, again, just a good friend that gave me this opportunity. I would never have the opportunity if it wasn't for this good friend. So,
well, cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, what's the best way for folks to learn more about NRS? Just go into the website and
Go into the website. There's a bunch of information on there. There's they do a bunch of really cool. There's all kinds of information on there. There's podcasts and some amazing athletes that are kayakers and that do all kinds of really incredible. Whitewater and you know, you can go on, there's a duct tape diaries they have. If you dig through the website, there's a bunch of really cool stuff there, adventurous stuff around the world, incredible people and athletes. It's really cool. It's called Duct Tape Diaries. But yeah, the website has a ton of information.
Really cool company.
Thanks.
I read about it prior to this. Obviously, I've known about NRS for mm-hmm. I grew up with NRS. You know, it's just one of those brands.
Yeah.
We were a river family mm-hmm. and just one of those brands that you're always around. Mm-hmm. But I hadn't ever taken the time to like read about the history of it and everything.
Sure.
And yeah, like you said, he started it in his garage in Moscow, Idaho, right?
Yeah.
And so cool.
And I had a chance. I went over there for training for 4 days to Moscow. And, you know, to tell you what type of company this is, you know, Bill Parks, I think he's pushing 80. And he picked me up for lunch.
Really?
In his Subaru, just to tell you kind of what type of a company this is. And, you know, he's PhD, I believe, a professor. And that's what brought him to Moscow, Idaho. But he picked me up for lunch, and it was, you know, just
it's so amazing.
He picked me up for lunch in his Subaru, and we went to his favorite spot to eat. It was, I don't know, we went to his favorite breakfast spot. It was like 2 o'clock, or I'm sorry, it was 11 something, and we ended up leaving at 2 o'clock. And so it was 2.5 hour lunch. They told me that was the longest lunch ever for any employee.
Really?
Yeah.
That's super cool.
We sat there and chatted.
That's awesome, man.
It was incredible.
I mean, how many companies can you that are that big could, would you ever even meet?
Yeah.
The founder, let alone he comes and grabs you and takes you to a 3-hour lunch. That's really cool.
Yeah, it was cool. And it was humbling, and it just really, it was just an eye opener. You know, he is an interesting person, an interesting life story, and incredibly intelligent. And so it was a very incredible opportunity for me to chat with him. And he shared some amazing life experiences. And then it turned into a situation where I was really curious about his life. And I was asking him, it almost felt like an interview, kind of like this. I was asking him a bunch of questions, you know, when did you first fall in love with whitewater? You know, whatever, like when's your first memory of thinking to yourself, wow, this is something I really am passionate about and want to pursue. And he told an amazing story about, you know, running a gear boat on the Grand Canyon or something like that. And it was really, really inspiring. So yeah, it was pretty, pretty incredible. So very fortunate.
Awesome, man. We were fortunate enough to be next door neighbors to the NRS booth at a show recently. And I was checking out, the Slipstream, right?
Yeah.
The Slipstream packages?
Yep, it's a Slipstream fishing package. Yeah, we've kind of upgraded the fishing frame. And, you know, kind of to your point earlier, anglers have been using the products for years and are familiar with NRS. But now NRS is kind of spending some more energy on fishing products. And this Slipstream raft fishing package, fishing frame and raft is a kind of a new thing for this year. And yeah, it's, there's three different sizes. There's a little boat, a 9'6" for two people. One you could put in the back of your truck, or on top of on top of the vehicle, even I've seen.
Right.
And as we know, there's a bunch of them out there now, little two person vessels to get away from the crowds. You could throw it off a bridge or whatever, drag it in a long ways. And then there's a medium-sized 12-foot raft package, and then the standard 13.9, like normal size fishing raft. So yeah, that's new for this year, and they'll be out next year. And yeah, that's something that I'll be selling a bunch of, I have a feeling.
Yeah, I think so, man. It looks like a really well-designed package. And the price, I really couldn't believe for
just
a turnkey fishing raft that, like, you know, just the kind of thing that you would need for around here, right? Like, just one and done boat.
For sure. It's you can buy it as a package. It comes with everything. Oars, this new fishing frame. As anglers, we've used NRS, you know, products, rafts, frames forever. But in my humble opinion, they finally have this thing dialed in. The fishing frame, that is. Mm. You know, just basic stuff like the anchor system, the anchor rope is encased in the side.
Rod holders.
Yeah,
rod holders. Built in, right?
Yeah.
The wrap around the side, right?
Like, yeah, totally.
All this stuff you used to have to piece together on your own, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right. Correct, exactly. So finally, it's all in one package. And just got off the phone this morning before I came to meet you with an old school outfitter in Wyoming, and he was asking about them. And yeah, so, you know, but he said he wanted to see one in person, obviously. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted to know when I could bring one down there. So I'm going to use that as an excuse as soon as I get one in my hands to put it on a trailer and
drive back to Pinedale.
Drive back to Wyoming and all over the place.
This place is awesome.
And I can't wait to use that as an excuse to go out with these outfitters and go fishing with them and show them the boat. So yeah, hopefully it all works out.
There you go, man. Well, that sounds a little bit better than the picture that you painted of the showering salesman.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Sitting at the hotel bar.
Exactly.
Putting a steak on the company card and drinking too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Try to avoid that.
Right on. All right, man. Well, thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate you taking the time to chat with us, and look forward to seeing you out there. And I'm going to pull the trigger on one of those boats here in the next couple of years. I'm ready for an upgrade.
So. For sure. Yeah, let me know. We'll get you into one. And thanks for taking the time, and thanks for having me. I really appreciate it, Justin.
Right on, man.
Go to thefebruaryroom.com, where you can access a complete library of our podcast and read more about our guests, their fishing stories, and favorite fly patterns. We're always looking for exceptional fly fishing yarns. And if you have one to spin, shoot us an email at info@thefebruaryroom.com. The February Room is always free, but if you feel like throwing a nickel in the pond, we appreciate any additional listener support. For companies and individuals interested in sponsorship opportunities, please contact us for our media kit. Thanks for stopping by the February Room. and we'll see you down here next week.